Muslims are set to become the second largest religious group in the U.S. after Christians by 2040. That's according to a new report from the Pew Research Center that says in 2017, there were nearly 3.5 million Muslims living in the U.S., and the population continues to grow by about 100,000 a year. And the show's Lauren Gilger joins us now with more on this. Lauren, what's behind the growth?
Well, Pew found that the vast majority of this growth is coming from immigration and high fertility rates among Muslim families. Now, Muslims still measure just over 1% of the population, but Pew also reports that by 2050, the U.S. Muslim population is projected to reach more than 8 million, or more than 2% of the nation's total population. So that's nearly twice the share of today. I wanted to know more about what this growth means for the Muslim community here in the U.S. So I got a hold of Arsalan Iftikhar. He's a human rights lawyer and a senior fellow for the Bridge Initiative at Georgetown University. He says one reason this growth might surprise you is because the Muslim population in the U.S. is so diverse.
A misnomer that often people have of Muslims is that all Muslims are Arabs or all Arabs are Muslims. Mm-hmm. But we're a very diverse group. Most people don't know that 25% of the American Muslim population are African Americans who have been indigenous to this country since slave ships brought them over 400 years ago. One-third of Muslims in America are from the Indian subcontinent of India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. We have about a quarter from Arab countries. And then we have another 15 to 20% of Latino and European descent. And so I think because we have such a diverse ethnic makeup of the Muslim population, you know, I think that we are going to start to see that Muslims and Islam in America is not a monolithic profile, as Donald Trump would have us believe.
Yeah. And there's a local mosque here in Phoenix and another community I've interviewed in the past that do sort of meet a Muslim events or like coffee in a mosque, mm-hmm. and invite in the outside community, because they say if you ask most Americans, they will say that they've never met somebody who is Muslim. Do you think that's going to change?
I think so, Lauren. I think, you know, if you look at most public opinion polls that have been done regarding Islam and Muslims after 9/11, most of them show that approximately 70% of Americans say that they don't know a Muslim in their everyday lives, even though their doctor is probably a Muslim, their accountant or their mechanic is probably a Muslim. And so it's the humanization of any sort of minority or marginalized group which leads to, you know, the normalization of that demographic group. And so it's important for us to get outside of our comfort zones and get to know people who are a little bit different from us. So going to visit mosques or churches or synagogues or temples, mm-hmm. And getting to know people within our communities who have different backgrounds will really, really go a long way in terms of the humanization and the reduction of the demonization that we're seeing today.
Yeah. And this, I think, comes at a really interesting time, this study, because at the same time that we're seeing this massive increase in the Muslim population here in the country, we're seeing a lot more anti-Muslim rhetoric and hate crimes and things like that. The politics around this are getting difficult right now. What do you think about that moment and that contrast? You think that there's hope for change?
I have to be an eternal optimist, but I also am a realist, and I understand that, you know, we have a president in the White House who one time told CNN news anchor Anderson Cooper that, quote, "I think Islam hates us," as though Islam were some, you know, sixth grade bully that he had to deal with. You know, so the Islamophobia and anti-Muslim rhetoric that we've seen from Donald Trump and his administration, you know, has led to, you know, a multitude of hate crimes and attacks on mosques in the United States. I think CNN found immediately in the 9 months after Donald Trump's election, on average, there were about 2 American mosques that were attacked in the United States every month. We see Muslim women who wear the hijab, the headscarf, who are routinely assaulted. You know, we saw in Portland, Oregon last year, there were 2 men, Good Samaritans, who were actually murdered by a white supremacist who was screaming Islamophobic and anti-Muslim slurs at 2 young females on this bus. I mean, the level of hate crimes and the intensity of this, especially post-Charlottesville, you know, with the sort of emboldening of the white supremacist neo-Nazi movement here in the United States, should be of concern to people of all backgrounds here in the United States, not just Muslims, not just African Americans, not just Latinos. And that's why it's important for us all to act as intersectional allies to one another to ensure that we can stand up for marginalized groups everywhere.
Yeah, and as that change happens, though, and as you see this population grow and at the same time this sort of Islamophobia happen, do you think that it will change inevitably because there are just more Muslims around?
Yes, I do, Lauren. I think that it's also important to see that not only are we growing demographically, population-wise, but in terms of being more influencers, you know, in the public sphere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you look at famous comedians like Dave Chappelle, who's a Muslim. You saw Mahershala Ali won the Academy Award. He's an African-American Muslim also. And the greatest athlete ever, Muhammad Ali, was a Muslim. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is a Muslim. Mm-hmm. You know, people see Muslims doing everyday American things, I think will really help to normalize us more into the social fabric of America. Again, even though Muslims have been in the United States since we were brought over on slave ships 400 years ago.
Yeah. Do you think that this is a moment where the conversation becomes about integration?
I do. You know, and I'm really glad that you use the term integration, because oftentimes, you know, the majority population or the government likes to use the word assimilation,
right.
Which again, it for again a human rights lawyer, it makes my skin crawl, because again it assumes that minorities should become like the majority. But integrating our own you know, diverse multicultural ethno-religious backgrounds within the, you know, the diverse social fabric of America is very important. Understanding that we have a lot more commonalities than we have differences, to understand that, you know, Islam is one of the three monotheistic Abrahamic faiths, along with Judaism and Christianity, that we believe in the Ten Commandments, that, you know, again, that we have a lot more similarities than differences at a time where, sadly, many politicians are focusing more on our differences than our similarities.
All right. Arsalan, thanks so much for joining us to talk about this.
My pleasure, Lauren. Thank you.
Arsalan Iftikhar is a human rights lawyer, senior fellow for the Bridge Initiative at Georgetown University, and he's the author of the book Scapegoats: How Islamophobia Helps Our Enemies and Threatens Our Freedoms. Here in the Valley, Muslim communities are also experiencing this growth. I went down to the Islamic Community Center of Tempe to talk to Christy Sabah, who works there. She's a convert to Islam, and she told me she's not surprised by this report either, but she still thinks there's work to be done to overcome the many prejudices that Muslims face here.
You know, some people may be surprised by it. I myself am not that surprised by it. I see it as a growing religion. 1.8 billion people practice a religion. That's 25% of the entire world population. Here we get a lot of requests for people to come tour the mosque, to come and talk to somebody, because they hear all this negative connotation in the media, on the news, and then, you know, it's great that they want to come to the source and find information and share that. We have classes here for people that are just trying to learn about the religion, not necessarily converting or anything like that, but just trying to get information. You know, we definitely just want to open our doors and let people know that if you have a question, come and ask. We'd love to show you around, to talk to you, and, you know, to get to know you on a personal level.
So that's fascinating. Tell me more about your own conversion. So you said you heard a lot of negativity about the religion after 9/11 and researched it. What was it that you found that you loved?
Sure. So my husband was actually Muslim, and we were practicing our separate religions for 6 years before the incident happened on 9/11. And I told my husband, I feel I need to study this because they're saying such negative stuff about your religion. I can't even defend you. Like, I really don't know anything about it. And so I began taking some courses and reading some books, and to me, there was just an answer for every question that I had. Anything I asked, why do you do this? Why is it this way? Why is this practice? There was an answer for it. And so I was able to find that inner peace. And I think that anybody who's searching for religion, they're looking for peace. That's what they're looking for. And the beauty about Islam is it is a religion of peace. It means peace. And so being able to find that inner peace was what solidified it for me.
And what has your experience been like as a convert, as a woman who's Muslim in this country for the last, you said, 16 years?
There is, you know, unfortunately with the anti-Muslim rhetoric that we hear on the national level, you know, there's always incidents here and there of people that say stuff or, you know, unfortunately, people get pretty brazen when they're in their cars and feel that, you know, they can, you know, try to run you off the road, things like that. But overall, the community here has been just phenomenal, very open, very accepting. You know, I have four daughters that I'm raising here, and, you know, I'm teaching them to be not only part of our Muslim community, but our community at large, and to get engaged and to participate and to kind of push back that negative narrative.
So here at this mosque, and as a member of the larger Muslim community here in the Valley for a long time, who is it that's coming? How are you seeing it grow?
When I first moved to the Valley, this mosque was the only mosque around that I knew of. So, you know, we would attend this mosque. Now living in Chandler, there's, you know, I think three different mosques in Chandler alone. So definitely with, you know, with people moving here with, I mean, the state is growing. People are moving from out of state, things like that. And they want a place to worship that's close to their home. So, you know, with that and with the converts, that's definitely been a growth of Muslims here in the state of Arizona for sure.
Does the mosque actively kind of go out to try to talk to the community and be a part of it? You've mentioned several times here that you like to try to counter those beliefs that people might have based on extremists. What are the efforts like there, and have they worked?
Definitely. So we try to do an open house a lot of times throughout the year, giving people the opportunity to come here to ask questions. We also try to hold a lot of interfaith events so that people can see the collaboration and us working together. And, you know, understanding that people of different faiths can work cohesively together and do great for the community at large in their own backyard.
So what are your hopes as this religion grows on a national level and here in the Valley and at this mosque? What are your hopes for your own community and for the way that your community is perceived by the rest of the country?
Yeah, definitely. I do have some hopes for the community. As I mentioned before, I have four daughters. My oldest one just put on the head covering, and so I do worry about her when she walks out the door, about her safety, about you know, the comments people might make to her, whether to her face or behind her back. It's a huge thing for, you know, a teenager to go through that. It's different for an adult, but, you know, I hope that one day we can have a place where a scarf isn't seen as a barrier. As, you know, people are able to accept and love people for who they are.
Christy Sabah, thanks so much for talking to me about this today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.